Part 3, initial approach.
So let's now talk about our initial clinical approach. How do you manage these guys? You get a lady that comes in with syncope. What's the first few things we always do?
Okay. First of all, IV O2 monitor is always a good place to start when we're approaching any bedside, but they don't necessarily need any of those things. I mean, again, especially this young, healthy patient who you think is likely going to be benign from the minute that they arrive in triage doesn't have to have an IV. So if they look fine and the suspicion for bad stuff is low on the onset, an IV is not mandatory. All right. Obviously, if you think that they're bleeding or they're unstable, you're going to get large bore IV access. That's a completely different story.
Agreed. And the same would go for O2 as well, right? You're not putting O2 on every patient. But yeah, if they're hypoxic or have any concerning vital signs, then you would certainly add a little supplemental O2. And then you mentioned you don't put everyone on cardiac monitoring. And I think you're talking about the young, otherwise healthy person who maybe sounds like a vasovagal or emotional event. But for everyone else, I have a pretty low threshold for putting people on a cardiac monitor. I feel like that's one of the reasons why they're there is for us to rule out a dysrhythmia. So certainly anyone with exertional syncope or any red flags for possible cardiac etiologies, those guys, I don't mind sticking on a monitor. I think that's important.
Okay, you're going to put them on a monitor, Mies, I can one-up you. If they're really high risk and there was any chest pain, or I think that this might be an acute coronary syndrome or something along those lines, well, I'm going to put defibrillation paddles on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that if they do have that, I mean, why are they there? They're there because they might have a dysrhythmia.
Right.
So if they have one, you want to be prepared for it. You want to see some VTAC, you want to see some defibrillation paddles.
True.
So I think that's an important point as well. So that's basically the situation. You're tailoring it to the patient.
One of the good things, Stuart, about syncope, and I do have to give it a little bit of kudos, is that a lot of the differential diagnosis and workup can simply be done with a simple history and physical. It doesn't require a significant amount of testing, but really, if you take a good history and do a pretty decent physical, you're going to be able to narrow down your differential quite significantly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what? It's not just us that are saying this. It's the big organizations like the American College of Emergency Physicians has come out with guidelines that say just that. This is all about taking a good history and physical, an EKG, and then only selective testing after that. So that means you have to do a good H&P, doesn't
it?
And so you generally start with the vital signs you've already got, and they need to be normal or near normal. I mean, if you're dealing with someone who's got a resting tachycardia or they're hypotensive or, you know, something like that, you're not in the syncope algorithm we're talking about, right? We're talking about healthy looking people. In terms of the focused H&P, you can actually just think back to our list of bad things, right? And you can work your way back from that. So for example, if they have any cardiac symptoms or signs, okay, that means chest pain.
Right.
Well, that's chest pain and syncope. And that's no longer just syncope. And that worries both of us, doesn't it? If they're short of breath, well, then that's not just syncope. That's a dyspneic patient, a short of breath patient that has syncope. That's a lot worse. So palpitations as well. And we mentioned it once and we'll mention it again. Exertional syncope. If they were exerting themselves, you know, they were running for something, playing basketball, and that's when the syncope happened. Everyone agrees that that is a high risk for a cardiac dysrhythmia.
Absolutely.
Any of those things. Yeah, and any of those things will basically be putting you down the I'm concerned admit monitor pathway. On exam, the same goes for a prominent murmur or a prominent cardiac impulse, a delayed impulse, something that's abnormal on your cardiac exam that makes you think of a structural cardiac disease. That, again, all puts you into a different category. That patient needs investigations, probably an echo.
Absolutely. And maybe unilateral leg swelling if you're concerned about PE and you're going to do your PERC history there within the cardiac system as well. So certainly, like you said, take the diagnoses that you're worried about and sort of work backwards and look at those historical questions that are pertinent to those diagnoses and look for those physical exam findings. Same thing for the neurologic system. If we're concerned about a subarachnoid hemorrhage, then certainly a sudden onset, maximal onset headache is a major red flag in their history. If you're concerned about TIA or CVA or stroke, then certainly stroke-like questions and physical exam findings are critical.
I would totally agree with you. And to be honest, just the fact that a patient has a new type of headache of any sort, in addition to syncope, you really have to think about subarachnoid pretty seriously in that case.
Agreed.
In terms of the stroke stuff, it can be very difficult to distinguish a stroke that simply results in loss of consciousness from syncope, but fortunately that's rare. Most strokes are going to involve some other neurologic findings. You know, for bleeding, Mies, there's obviously historical things. Hopefully they're going to tell you if they're having rectal bleeding or if they're vomiting blood, but let's not forget, there's a critical role now for point of care ultrasound in the initial bedside assessment of these patients. You got a patient who had syncope and say, for example, they look sick or their blood pressure is low. You're going to want to really quickly with that ultrasound probe check to see that they don't have free fluid in their belly. Maybe they've got a ruptured ectopic or there's some occult trauma. You're going to want to check if they're a little bit older and they have hypertension for a ruptured AAA, an abdominal aortic aneurysm, right away. And so for some of these cardiovascular diagnoses that are really serious, including some of the things like pulmonary embolus and aortic dissection that now more and more we're able to recognize on ultrasound, ultrasound can be key.
Maybe you could find that stuff on ultrasound, Stuart, but some of us couldn't find a small Australian city on ultrasound. Look, the concept that I want to sort of bring up now, and use it if you find it useful and completely disregard it if you don't, is the idea of the syncope and syndrome. So syncope and shortness of breath, syncope and chest pain, syncope and palpitation, syncope and a murmur, syncope and leg swelling, syncope and headache, syncope and a focal neurological finding, syncope and abdominal pain, syncope and an exertional component. That's the way I think about it when I'm first talking to the patient. So you're talking to the patient and most of the time it's just plain old syncope. But if you're specifically thinking about your differential diagnosis that we talked about and then ask those specific questions or look for those specific exam findings, if as soon as you find one, you realize, this is probably not just plain syncope. Okay, I had a syncopal episode, all right? And my leg on the right is twice as big as the leg on the left. So that's the concept of the syncope and syndrome. Again, it's sort of a way of thinking about how you get your history and physical examination in a fast way. We asked the interns at Fresno about the syncope and syndrome, and to a man and a woman, they had no idea what it was. And it's because I just made it up. But if you find it useful, use it. If you don't, disregard. All right, Stuart and Mizuho are about to talk about the EKG manifestations of badness in a syncope patient. But before we get there, let's ask one of our interns again what they look for on EKG in the syncope patient. Which bad things can show up? So this is Dmitry Steblowski, I believe is his last name. And I'm pretty sure that he's going to get more than you and I are going to get. Let's go.
Okay, so you're looking for, obviously, there's typical EKG stuff, the rate and rhythm. Are they having an arrhythmia currently? You look at the intervals. The other typical things that you could look for in syncope would be Brugada syndrome, which is like typically described as RSR prime, and like an ST elevation in the anterior leads. You would be looking for arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia would be a fancy one as well.
Can you please know less answers so we have something to teach?
Tests.
All right, Stuart. So in the setting of syncope or even presyncope, because EKG is so important, let's talk about the really important things to look for on that ECG. I mean, right off the bat, I think we all look for those dysrhythmias, right? Ventricular tachycardias, SVTs, so the tachycardias, and then also the severe bradycardias. I think that's pretty straightforward.
And then there's the ischemic changes. And so, you know, is there a STEMI? Is there ST segment depression? New T wave changes, new Q waves? Obviously, those patients might be taking you down an acute coronary syndrome type of algorithm.
Then there's a bunch of little things that we sometimes like to prompt our residents to really look for. So let's talk about those things, starting with, what's the deal with prolonged QT?
So it turns out, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's really hard to describe these things. And so we made a nice little video for you. So if you follow the link on the show notes, you can see all of these bad manifestations on EKG in syncope patients. We did that for you because of the love. But in terms of a list, it goes something like this. You look for arrhythmias, you look for ischemia, you look for prolonged QT, but you also look for short QT. You look for Brugada syndrome, that RSR pattern in V1, V2, V3 with a little ST segment elevation. You look for WPW, short PR interval, slurred upstroke. You look for big voltages that suggest hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, and you might find those needle-like Q waves, which are almost never there. You're going to look for RV strain. Maybe you're going to see some deep symmetric T wave inversion in the anterior leads, for example. And you look for something like the epsilon wave. Now that's a list. It's not necessarily complete, but that's a list. Go check out the video because a picture is worth a trillion, billion, trillion words.
Let's talk about the other tests that you may or may not get. Again, a lot of this is going to be guided by your history and your physical exam. And of course, if you see something on your ECG that's concerning, that's going to trigger you to further do more testing. But what about point of care tests? Like, how important is pregnancy test to you?
It's so important. I mean, I would never let a woman of childbearing age or even close to childbearing age home with syncope and not check a pregnancy test. I mean, it's so common and you've got to make that diagnosis. Not just for the ectopic Mies, you have to rule out ectopic in that situation, right? But just pregnancy itself,
yeah, absolutely,
can cause syncope and they need to be, you know, informed about that and that's an issue. You know what? I try to limit this in most patients to just things I can do at the bedside. And so aside from the EKG and the pregnancy test in women, And the point of care hemoglobin, I think that's another big one.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, kind of really speaks to all those bleeding things in a large way. It doesn't eliminate the possibility that they're bleeding, but it's a big one. Between those three, I'm done in a lot of patients.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So let's go over it again. You're going to get a good history, good physical. You're going to do an EKG in pretty much everybody, almost everybody, maybe everybody. And then you're going to do some targeted testing. The targeted testing is going to be a pregnancy test in a woman of childbearing or near childbearing age, and a hemoglobin. And that is all you really need to do for most people initially. But make sure you read the EKG. Take a good look at the EKG. Look for those things that we told you about on MRAP HD.